I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, is Donald Trump really a genius when it comes to negotiating? He likes to tell everyone that he is. He certainly is different and chaotic when it comes to making deals, and that seems more influenced by his gut instinct than from a calculated strategy. But there are patterns to how Trump goes about negotiating, and that seems better suited for real estate than for the global stage. Peter Johnston has written a playbook to understand Trump's methods and madness when it comes to being at the deal-making table. It is a nonpartisan look, and he sees some good things and some bad things about Trump's art of the deal. This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Live from the John L. Santico Studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. President Donald Trump has built much of his public identity around the idea that he is a master negotiator. Long before the White House, there was the art of the deal, as President Trump has taken that approach to tariffs, trade agreements, war, and diplomacy, making enormous demands, threatening to walk away, searching for leverage, and frequently pushing negotiations beyond the boundaries of conventional politics. But does this work? Negotiation expert Peter D. Johnston has studied Trump's deal-making across nearly five decades. He says Trump can be extraordinarily effective at understanding leverage, fear, and the psychology of the person across the table. But Johnston also argues that Trump's instinct for win-loss bargaining can destroy trust and sometimes prevent him from getting a better deal. Johnston's new book is Negotiating with Trump: Lessons on Power, Influence, and Dealing with Extreme Bargainers. And Peter D. Johnston, welcome to The Source.
Thank you, David. It's a pleasure to be on your show and an honor.
Well, it's great to have you, and I'm looking forward to your insights. And listeners, call in with your questions and comments, observations about Trump's negotiating style. Do you marvel at it or wonder at it? 833-877-8255-833-TPR-TALK. So, Peter, let's talk about this book in terms like this is not a partisan examination of Trump. You're not looking at this from any particular partisan point of view, right?
Exactly, David. And that's important because my goal was really to have people better understand Trump as a negotiator, his strengths, his weaknesses, not attack him as a person, but really just focus on how he goes about influencing others. And as a result of that, you get a book that's nonpartisan and that hopefully will help people not only better influence Trump, even as citizens, or whether you're a diplomat or a business person, you'll understand after reading Negotiating with Trump how to better negotiate with the president, but you'll also understand how to better negotiate in your own life, personally and professionally, particularly in dealing with extreme bargainers like the president.
So do you think, because, I mean, you have to admit, regardless of your politics, Trump has been extraordinarily successful because he went from being a real estate guy in New York City to becoming president of the United States twice. Okay, so he has something going on there. And do you think other people are going to be copying him and looking at the way that he uses his larger-than-life personality, making lots of big promises, using a lot of threats and pressure to, this is the model. I'm going to copy this guy, and here's the book that's going to tell me how to do it. So we all have to be prepared for more people like this?
That is absolutely a possibility, and I would guess we see that across the world right now, where you see one of the most powerful people in terms of military and economic might using this extreme bargaining approach, and others who try to copy it do it at their own peril. Because while Trump has made it work with some successes and lots of failures, and certainly has his genius, as you mentioned in the introduction, for the most part, this model of negotiation that he uses has been proven to not be as effective as other models.
Does Trump, according to your observations, you've been looking at him and picking him apart, teasing out stuff, does he negotiate in good faith?
That's a question. Let me reframe that because I'm not sure I can answer whether he may well believe that he's negotiating in good faith all the time because of his personality type. But I would say that he, in fact, objectively, it would not be good faith negotiations often, whether that's his intent or not. There are two styles of negotiation, very basically, that I detail in the book. One is a fixed pie approach to negotiating, where basically, if you and I are negotiating, David, I assume that there is a limited amount of value, zero-sum game, where our job as negotiators is to fight to get the biggest piece of that pie, regardless of the impact on relationship and trust. This is Trump's model. The model that has been proven and developed since the Second World War to be much more effective is one where it's an expanded pie. And we expand that pie by exchanging our facts openly, by discussing our mutual interests, adding ingredients in that respect to grow the pie. We use lots of different ideas for how we can meet each other's interests. And we use guiding standards, objective indicators of what's acceptable based on precedent in the marketplace, to guide us to an outcome that grows that pie such that both you and I get bigger pieces of pie than we would ever get, even if we won the biggest piece from a fixed pie approach. So this is at the core, in terms of talking about good faith, bad faith, whatever it might be, this is the flaw and the genius of Trump, that he's able to make the fixed pie work at all, though I would argue he's left billions on the table for himself taking a fixed pie versus an expanded pie approach, and trillions for the country.
So expanded pie approach, looking at a global trade, that if we do well with our other nation partners, the global economy grows, not only benefiting us, but benefiting other countries as well. Taking a fixed pie approach, I'm only concerned about what's going on with our trade, and then therefore I may have a better deal, but there's less to go around. So is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right. So you nailed it. Trade is a perfect example that I delve into, where this is why economists are pulling their hair out, most economists around the world, over Trump's approach to tariffs, which he has been anchored to for, as you probably know, for decades, when he accused the Japanese of ripping off the Americans without looking at the broader relationship with the Japanese and why that whole holistic relationship met U.S. interests. But yeah, trade is a perfect example where we exchange what we're good at, our comparative advantage, with one another. And in, you know, one thing that's not discussed in that is, which is remarkable, is that the U.S. has a surplus with the world in services, but Trump has anchored the discussion around goods only, and things that you can see, plants and factories. But in reality, the U.S. is running a surplus with many nations around the world in services, but no one's touching that. All that said, to your point, trade is a perfect example where well-executed trade agreements represent the benefits of an expanded pie approach to negotiation.
Right, and we've seen that with the NAFTA or the CM, the New Deal. We got to take a break here. And the number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. What say you about Trump's art of the deal or art of the what's going on. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With me on the line, Peter D. Johnston. He has written the book Negotiating with Trump, Lessons on Power, Influence, and Dealing with Extreme Bargaineers. He has cracked the code on Donald Trump when it comes to his deal making. If you got a question or a comment about how Trump does these deals, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We have seen Donald Trump go into many of these negotiations. His first opening is something that is extreme. He really just is something like he goes in with an extreme offer on the table, which really can't be taken seriously, and he thinks this is this will work for him. Does it work?
That it depends. It does from time to time. And that's part of why Trump pulls this off with a suboptimal fixed pie approach, is when he stakes out that extreme position. And he does this with numbers, David, but he, you know, in trade deals saying, look, accept a 25% tariff or I'm going to hit you with 100% tariff. He simplifies the negotiation to one or two key variables when it's very complex in truth, like trade deals. And once in a while, when he's negotiating, somebody actually accepts his offer. And so this only spurs him to continue to use this style, knowing he can back off his extreme as necessary and end up somewhere in the middle that's still well above where he should have ended up in the first place. So an example of this, by the way, is Boeing. And the Air Force One deal that Trump renegotiated in 2018 during his first term, the initial number, according to Trump, was $5.6 billion that was to be paid for Air Force One, the two planes. And Trump got them down, the CEO, down to $3.9 billion. So because he said it has to start with a three. This is on an incredibly complex deal. He says it has to be in the $3 billion range versus $6 billion range. And Dennis Muilenburg, the CEO at the time of Boeing, accepted that number. And as a result, Boeing, by the way, has lost close to $3 billion now on a $3.9 billion deal because it was a fixed price contract, which Trump also got by negotiating in an extreme way. The challenge with this approach, and I'll finish up here, is guess what? The planes weren't ready by 2021, as Trump had demanded initially. And Boeing loses money every time it works on those planes. And that's one of the reasons why Trump had to opt for a gift from Qatar to have a plane, because that plane wasn't ready.
But they can't even use that plane because it's so the security is not up to snuff. Let me ask you about this. Another extreme offer that Trump has made is with Iran. Either you open the Strait of Hormuz or we're going to wipe your civilization off the face of the earth. How was that working for him?
There's an example where an extreme demand, unconstrained as Trump is, hurts relationship, trust, even with a heinous Iranian regime, and shuts down all trust going forward. Any deal that longer term on nuclear material, for example, or the Strait, is going to require some degree of trust. And Iran's a perfect example of a fixed pie approach. I'm going to get the biggest piece of pie, making demands where it doesn't work. And it's why so many administrations before, including Obama's, and again, nonpartisan take on this, Obama was taking with the Iranian deal in 2015, an expanded pie approach, realizing you had to meet some of Iran's interests for them to give up the nuclear game. And that's what they did, not perfectly, But we see today the benefits of that approach after having Trump rip up that agreement in 2018.
And here we are today. Again, we've gone through another round of we've made a deal, we're working on a deal, and then there is no deal. And it seems to me like Iran is holding all the cards. In fact, they've got it straight, and Trump does not.
Well put. There are two things you look for from the outside, which I explain in negotiating with Trump, in assessing a deal if you're not involved. One is the how, and this is way more important than the what, by the way, but the how the deal was reached. And Trump has sent his personal envoys to this negotiation in Kushner and Witkoff, as well as Vance. But they're not experts in this stuff.
They're amateurs.
I'll let you describe them, but they're not experts. And they're representing Trump's personal interests. He trusts them. And so versus having somebody who's there to fully represent America and with expertise, the how here is lacking. It's also the how when you're threatening somebody with annihilation to say yes to something. The moment they have any leverage, they're going to use it and they're going to get out of any deal they've reached. So the how was flawed on and is flawed on an ongoing basis in reaching a deal. But then the what? The Iranians have, of course, discovered they have a superpower through closing down the strait for the time being, at least. And on the nuclear front, they still have their material. And by the way, my last book was about building nuclear weapons. It's not easy. It's easy enough to actually disperse that nuclear material because the Iranians were expecting what was happening. So it would be a real possibility at this point that the costs for the United States of shutting down that Iranian program, nuclear program, are just going to be too great and that they're on the path, in fact, over time to get a nuclear weapon.
All right, let's go to a caller. We have John, and the number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. John, you're on The Source. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call, and first time, long time. But I used to work for a corporation that was based, I was in Chicago at the time, and during that time, Trump Tower was being built. And we bid some products, and for some reason, Mr. Trump decided to get involved in the negotiation. And the company I worked for was global, so reached out to the corporate lawyers to say, hey, you know, there's some sensitivities here. How should we go to approach this with him? And they said, oh, it's real easy. The third time he's going to walk, so make sure your cost is set at that third time. But you'll go back and forth a few times with him. So we ended up winning the job. But, you know, that's some easy insight to learn about somebody. And because that kind of information is I mean, people know you can see the world leaders kind of using that to get what they want out of him and making him feel like he wants.
And relative to Iran, I'm horrified that we are between a rock and a hard place, and there's no easy or good way out at this point. And thank you for taking my call.
John, thank you for calling in. Appreciate your insight and story. It's a good story. Peter D. Johnston, what do you say there?
Well, John's point is well taken, and you can play Trump's back and forth fixed pie bargaining game. Again, it doesn't help you on the trust side, and it usually, when somebody acts like that, it's often the case in business generally that it's a bit of a nightmare working with clients like that or suppliers. But to John's point, Trump's been accused of TACO, right? Trump always chickens out. And it's because he's not used to, he spent 70 years of his life negotiating just based on his personal interests and in more private business deals where those tactics that he employs aren't as transparent. You didn't know what you were getting. Certainly reputationally, some people had figured it out, but it wasn't widespread knowledge. When it gets into the public media and he's constantly taking an extreme approach and then backing off several times, as John says, it's just not as effective, and it's predictable, and you can play it.
With Trump, it seems like a deal is never done. He's always ready to change the terms even after everyone has agreed to it. And we've seen that recently with this nuclear deal with Saudi Arabia. Hours after they made a deal, he wanted to change the terms. It's always like you're never done. Keep pushing. Is that something that you noticed?
Absolutely. And it's part of what I do in the first part of negotiating with Trump is assess how he uses the psychology of negotiation, but also his personality type. And I'm a skeptic of some aspects of Myers-Briggs, but in Trump's case, it's incredibly revealing. You get a template for who he is as a person. He's called a promoter by the psychologist David Kiersey. And promoters love to act in the moment. Trump just really doesn't see beyond today. He loves brinkmanship as part of being a promoter. And he's short-term thinker, doesn't like an agenda, and very fluid in what he likes or doesn't like, and is not decisive, which goes against a core part of his brand, I'd argue, which is power and authority and being decisive, looking like the strong man for, you know, 30, 35% of Americans who like that. And yet, in fact, he's not decisive. And I don't say that critically. He's not decisive. There's a benefit to it in that he's fluid. He doesn't like to lock things down prematurely because there might be a better option tomorrow. And yet that undermines him in terms of trust when he withdraws on the Saudis like he did with respect to what you just mentioned.
But you don't need trust when you have leverage, apparently.
Yeah, that's not true. So that's what Stephen Miller would say, that military might wins out. I talk about this extensively in my book. That's a naive assumption. It sounds powerful to say, and strong to say, military might, which Miller did after Venezuela, is all that matters. The truth is it can work in the short term, but to win over hearts and minds, as we know from America's sad experience in so many wars, you actually have to win the people over and pull them on side, not push them with weaponry.
So where do you think the trust meter is with Iran?
Iran's view of America, or
you have Trump's when Trump, he says, oh, here's another deal, let's make another deal, and it's the back of a napkin deal like last time, and what do you think they would put any stock into it?
Well, absolutely, and that's part of the challenge here in terms of getting to a final agreement. You know, Trump, of course, the Iranians often can't be trusted on so many fronts, but just The fact you asked that question is a concern. And this is where America's traditional approach to negotiation and, you know, generally being honest and straightforward and coming through on its commitments, just like Obama did with the 2015 nuclear deal. It doesn't have to be trust in the sense that you're my best friend and I know you'll do whatever's in my interest. It's just trust in terms of predictability. And that is a credential that's missing right now on both sides.
Well, his unpredictability could be seen as a strength, and I want to get to that later on. But you have to have trust if you want to make a deal so that the other side knows that you will keep your end of the deal. And if the deal is never done, you're always ready to change the terms. That just doesn't happen.
And so you don't end up with a deal and you end up with ongoing uncertainty that creates global chaos and undermines the global economy and raises prices in the U.S. On Trump's followers as well. And one of the things, David, I would say is that in the book, I talk about Trump's seven core interests. And I detail those because more than any president in the history of the United States, I argue, Trump acts on his own personal interests, even sending personal envoys, as mentioned earlier, to negotiations.
Right, and these envoys have business dealings in those areas, billions of dollars at the same time. We're going to hear more about that. And I do want to talk about his strengths. He has strengths. And unpredictability could be one of them. So I want to talk to you about that when we come back from the break. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We'd love to hear from our listeners about what they think about Donald Trump's negotiating style. Is he working in the best interest of the nation for himself? Is this working at all? We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
Support for TPR comes from UT San Antonio, offering degree programs and research focused on workforce development, student success, and health innovation across Texas. UTSA.edu. UT San Antonio, the University of Ambition.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about Donald Trump and his negotiating style. We're speaking with Peter D. Johnston. His book is Negotiating with Trump, Lessons on Power, Influence, and Dealing with Extreme Bargaineers. You want to hear from our listeners about that. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Let's go to J.D. And J.D., you're on The Source. Go ahead.
Yes, I just want to make a comment that it doesn't seem like Trump really negotiates. What he does, if he does negotiate, it's out of power. He uses his power and his money by suing people to get his way.
All right, J.D., good point. So Peter D. Johnston, is that true?
So, J.D., yes, it's a good point in terms of how Trump approaches many negotiations. I would just add to that that to define negotiation, we're negotiating anytime we're trying to influence someone to do something. So most of us negotiate all day with our friends and family and at work. You don't have to have lawyers and a contract involved. That said, Trump, for sure, what JD describes is he goes straight to commitment, saying you better accept this, JD, or else I'm going to take you to court or hurt you somehow. And that's part of a fixed pie approach to negotiation. And you can assume you can't negotiate with that, or you can use the different levers of negotiation, including building coalitions to counter Trump. And that's been done very effectively over time. So Trump wants you to think he's invincible and you can't negotiate with him. But we're seeing Iran, for example, say, okay, you want to go to your alternatives of threatening us? Here's what we can do. We can shut down the strait. So they are negotiating with him, but it is very aggressive, to be sure. And, you know, I can cite lots of examples across time, including when John McCain stopped Trump on shutting down Obamacare, aspects of Obamacare. You know, that was a negotiation. He's been stopped by MAGA, his own people, over the Epstein files. He didn't want to release them. And the victims came out and MAGA media said, no way, you've got to do this or else we're withdrawing our support. So you can. Well,
we're still waiting for those files, by the way.
We are indeed, but half of them are out. So, just to say to JD's point, don't overlook the fact that there are lots of examples where people have negotiated firmly with Trump, including Zelensky in the Oval Office meeting in February 2025, which a lot of people looked at as a disaster. But I would argue today, Ukraine is making advances because of how Zelensky firmly handled his own interests, his nation's interests, and Trump in that Oval Office meeting in 2025.
Let's go to another caller. We have Jose, and Jose, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I'd like to say that Trump is restricted. He doesn't negotiate. He doesn't have negotiators. If you call Kushner and Witkoff negotiators, I think that's not possible. They're not negotiating. What they're doing is it's continuity of agenda. They're following the agenda, which is to have full spectrum dominance over the Middle East, because if they pull out now, they lose the prospect of disabling Russia, China, and Iran, and also they increase the risk of losing dollar dominance in the region. So Trump doesn't need to negotiate, all right? He doesn't have it's all a farce. And as for the Zelensky comment, Ukraine is losing. Ukraine is being shattered. So whatever negotiations that Trump did with Zelensky were for naught. All right. And there are no gains. That's fantasy.
Okay, Jose, thank you for your call. Our guest, Peter G. Johnston, is not an expert on geopolitical politics and military might. But, you know, what can you take from that call?
Well, I think the caller, Jose, is absolutely right that, you know, in terms of identifying Kushner and Witkoff as not being up to this task. But I might push back and say that they are definitely negotiating. They're trying to influence the Iranians towards a deal. The deal that was reached through the MOU was a very weak one, obviously, in terms of meeting U.S. interests. It certainly satisfied Iranian interests with hundreds of billions in reconstruction, for example, and nothing really on the nuclear front, and then the Strait, no word on that either. So they're negotiating, but they're not in a strong position to negotiate because they led with this military approach and fixed pie approach rather than leading with an expanded pie approach to negotiation. And that was very much driven by Trump's own, in my opinion, his interests as opposed to American interests. And I think what you've got to keep the scorecard on his interests in terms of how well they've been satisfied on all fronts versus American interests, to understand that he may actually be negotiating quite effectively in Iran based on his own personal interests, even though objectively on American interests, you'd say he gets a failing grade.
He said, whenever you enter into a conversation with somebody or trying to get something out of somebody, you're doing a negotiation. Do you think Trump was going at his campaigning when he was campaigning for president? Was he coming at it like a negotiation?
Yeah, absolutely. And whether he considers that or it a negotiation or not, again, he's trying to influence Americans during elections to vote for him. And why he cannot be underestimated in terms of being an effective negotiator, even if you have to measure him differently based on his personal interests, for example, he negotiated his way to power twice by getting enough Americans to go into the ballot box and check his name. And that's not a contract in the full sense of a contract. Lawyers aren't involved, but that's a deal.
What's a social contract of some sorts?
Exactly.
But people have said that he comes to politics as a transaction. So he says, I can stop the war with Ukraine on day one. I can lower gas prices on day one and food prices. And I can build the wall and Mexico will pay for it. That's one thing that he talked about a lot. It never happened. You know, so he is making these extreme positions when he is out there negotiating for the votes of the people, and then he doesn't deliver, but he's able to, you know, get away with that.
That's right. And so he stakes out that extreme position on ending the war in Ukraine, for example, day one. And a good part of his base, based on algorithms and how social media works, will actually believe that. They will take it because they're not looking at a lot of counter sources to that, whether that's viable or not. And then there's another part, maybe independents who go, I don't know, maybe you won't end at day one, but this is how positional bargaining works, by the way, is right, stakes out an extreme position, and then you end up somewhere in the middle statistically. So a lot of independents would say, yeah, he won't do it day one, that's not possible, but he might do it within 2 months. And then there are others at the opposite extreme, Democrats, who might say that's never going to happen based on his track record. So, again, it's all negotiation and influence. And I would just say to your listeners that the way to think about Trump is his personality type, as it's been labeled, which is he's a promoter. That's literally the label that David Kearsey puts on someone like Trump. And so it's less about, that's all about influence. less about effective deal making in terms of structuring formal deals and putting them together. Anytime you hear Trump say something, realize he's promoting that. And you know what, David, I'm not even sure he lies as much as he as much as
the George Costanza rule. It's not a lie if you believe it at the time.
That's, if you want to call it the Costanza rule, absolutely. That's what I'd say. I think the promoter in Trump believes what he says in the moment often.
So as a promoter, does that include the personal attacks that he uses? Is that part of his negotiating style when he's in the Oval Office and a reporter will ask him about the Epstein files and he'll tell the reporter, you're a nasty person? Is that the negotiation there?
Yeah, that's a common tactic of hard and extreme bargainers, is if I'm negotiating with you, David, I attack you as a person. And what am I trying to achieve by that? The lesser you feel about yourself and the value you contribute, then the more you're likely to cough up at the table in substantive concessions because you've been made to feel like you have no value. And Trump knows this very well. And that's why he uses relationship that way.
Well, he goes after reporters and we're not allowed to tell to hit back. You know, we're not able to say, no, you're a nasty person and your makeup looks gross. You know, you can't do that to the guy. You have to just sit there and say, yes, sir. Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Yes, and specifically to when he does that to reporters, because he also does it to counterparts in all contexts. He is obviously using that as a smart tactic, not judging it, to try to discredit, particularly for his followers, that reporter and, you know, fake media, so that right. The facts of the situation are undermined and Trump's view of the world, his opinion as a promoter, is the one that will rule.
All right, we got to take a break here. We're going to come back with more Peter D. Johnston negotiating with Trump. I really want to ask you about, you know, comparing him to Biden or more conventional politicians. Does Trump actually have an edge because he is so unconventional? 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Source continues right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies, Peter D. Johnston's with us, author of Negotiating with Trump. So does Trump have an edge? Can he do more? Because compared to like Biden or Obama, even previous Republican presidents, George W. Bush, because he was not confined by the rules.
Absolutely. So again, going back to personality type as a promoter, which is an extrovert, sensor, thinker, perceiver, for those listeners who know Myers-Briggs, it's the most popular personality tool in the world. He's a promoter, and it means that he's very fluid in the moment, can use brinkmanship, does not care about norms or standard rules that others do. And what this allows is, and no ideology, by the way. So, and I say this again, without criticism, it is a real competitive advantage he has that he can turn on a dime and change his view on something because it meets his political interests, or he thinks it does, to do so. So this is a real advantage. You look at how he embraced evangelicals back in 2016. He doubled his support from 40% in 2015 to 2016, 80% plus, and to this day, 80-85% range in the last election. And it was because he didn't care about the same things evangelicals did, and therefore there were no compromises for him. He just fully embraced evangelicals to bring them on board because he saw how well Ted Cruz had done in several states with the support of evangelicals, and he wanted to bring that to the national election, which he did so effectively. And there are part of the bedrock of his support because of his ability to be so fluid and have no rules for himself.
So you talked about how he doesn't see beyond today. He is focused on the problems of today. And it works amazingly well for him. He doesn't care. Okay, we're draining the strategic petroleum reserve, and in 2 months it's going to be empty. And it's like, I don't care. Today, drain it because it keeps gas prices lower today. I'll worry about that when we get there. We'll jump off that bridge when we get there. So is that his style?
Absolutely. And we see that, and we see the downside to it in terms of being strategic, right? It's very tactical to be day to day, and you lose out on the bigger picture strategy. And I think that's mired the U.S. now in a war in Iran that is extremely unfavorable to its interests. But again, if you go through Trump's interests, including power and authority, wealth and status, the need to settle grievances, a need for distractions at home from the Epstein files, for example, and a need to pacify allies like evangelicals and Netanyahu, that meets his short-term interests. Trump, I will just say this in terms of that short-term approach, David. If the history books don't spend many pages, if not chapters, on Trump's need for excitement, then they've missed the plot on Trump as a decision maker and negotiator. Because he says in The Art of the Deal, which is supposedly a book to impart all of his strategies and tactics about negotiation, he says early on, I don't know where all these deals I'm going to talk to you about are ultimately going to end up. I don't look backwards. I don't look forwards. I just enjoy in the moment. And I love the excitement of just playing the game. And that's, at its essence, how you can better understand Trump as a negotiator is, and even in Iran, what's he getting out of that personally? Some would say he's a thrill seeker. Neuroscientists have said that, who get extra surges of adrenaline and dopamine and less cortisone in their blood system that would, more cortisone would scare people into not acting. He downplays risks as a result of that, they say. And so really, regardless of the outcome, Trump would appear to love the risk and just playing the game. And he has said that himself. So again, that is part of this daily approach to waking up and going, what can I do today that's going to make headlines, make me the center of attention, and give me a thrill?
Right. So Trump's appetite for risk could be especially effective in a crisis, I guess. Or we saw him go into Venezuela and, you know, abscond with Maduro. People see that as that worked. That was a success. But here we have Venezuela, and what are we doing with it? It's a country that just went through a terrible earthquake, and these are people that need help and support. And what are we doing for them? But so do you think that Venezuela is an example of his use of appetite for risk?
Sure. It's excitement. It's risk. It's
not his. He wasn't out there. He wasn't right, in a right. Chopper,
afar.
Fast roping down and stuff.
No. And again, you know, it was a show of power and authority, and he revels in that. It's part of his brand. It's a need to settle grievances with Venezuela over its expropriation of American assets.
And brutal dictatorship.
And but it's not about democracy in terms of American interests. It's very much driven by Trump's own interests. And that includes generating wealth for those in the oil industry. And we don't know. I heard recently Trump was asked, where are the proceeds from the oil sales from Venezuela going? And he just said, yeah, they're coming into us. But there's no accounting for that. So it's definitely generating wealth. We don't know for whom.
Yeah. So how do we benefit by better understanding Trump's ability, his negotiating style? How is that going to help us all?
Well, I think it makes him a little more predictable and understandable. In fact, his approach to negotiation is too predictable. And as one of your callers pointed out, he just stakes out the most extreme position possible and keeps pushing, 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 as he himself says.
And then he does the taco.
And then he will do the taco. He'll back off because ultimately he's been too extreme. And you see that pattern repeated, and it becomes, as I say, predictable. And you know you're not going to say yes to his extreme demand. But what you can be aware of is you can re-anchor that conversation in terms of when he stakes out extreme positions. So with Boeing, for example, I recreate that negotiation with Boeing CEO to show you how you can be effective in handling Trump. Rather than playing the same extreme negotiation approach, I want something that starts with a $3 billion versus $6 billion, which ultimately hurts him, right? Because he doesn't have his planes, and he's had to rely on Qatar's plane very controversially. So what you need to do with Trump is be firm on your own interests, on market standards. And if Boeing's CEO, Muhlenberg, had said to Trump, Mr. President, just to be clear, in this negotiation over Air Force One, my priority and my board's is your safety and security. And we will not agree to anything in this meeting today that puts those at risk. And that's a pretty compelling framing for Trump, and hard for him to dispute when you're talking about his safety and security and starting with his interests and why in the long term you have the expertise to know that if you accept half the price for these planes and a fixed price contract, you're actually not going to be able to deliver those quality planes on time. And that is how you would negotiate firmly with Trump, just as Zelensky did in the Oval Office over rare earths, a rare earth deal, where 2 months later he got a better deal on that front for Ukraine.
Yeah, so, I mean, is this a slash and burn system that Trump uses? He's willing to burn everything down to the ground so that he can claim victory, even though he may not actually have gotten that victory.
Yeah, absolutely. And I lay out what I call the Trump influence doctrine in my book, Negotiating with Trump, which is disrupt the status quo, realign with his interests and America's interests, his interests first, America's interests as well. And then third, claim. Once you've disrupted and you've realigned values and put people in place who represent conservative values in your administration, then you can claim on the wealth side and rights that have been taken for granted or have always been rightfully taken for granted by Americans across time.
Do you think when we're done with Trump and we kind of have a more of a clear-eyed view of like everything that happened, that we should have a more evidence-based world and not so much based on the empty promises, ridiculous claims of success, and say, we want the evidence because we're not exactly in a great position right now.
Point taken, and I would say, you know, evidence-based for sure, that relates to communication of facts as well as objective standards, including laws and regulations. Those have been critical to America's rise over the last 100 years. But ultimately, what we want to return to is what we had already, which is this expanded pie approach to negotiation where my winning doesn't mean you lose, David. It means that you can win as well by measuring your success by how well your interests were satisfied.
Yeah, win-win situations. Win-win.
Exactly. And yeah. Not naively, but smartly, just as I've described with some of the negotiations we talked about.
All right,
and so what we want to move towards is an expanded pie world back to where we were versus a fixed pie approach, which undermines trust and value over time.
Yeah, and both parties did the expanded pie deal. It wasn't just one. So Peter D. Johnston, author of Negotiating with Trump, fun talking with you today. Thanks. It was great.
Thanks, David. I really enjoyed that, and thanks to your callers.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.